You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Stardom Road as we continue down the anniversary road here on the show, this time talking our favorite matches. But before I get going with my co-host, let me introduce my co-host, as always, Trent. Trent, how are we on this fine evening or afternoon for you?
I'm doing quite well because I've just watched four fantastic matches for this particular podcast. I like this whole concept that we're doing of, oh, we need to do some research for these shows. So we're going to have to watch some of the best matches Stardom have put out and with some of the best wrestlers I've had in their company. It's such a difficult job, this.
Yeah, only matches we prefer, obviously.
Like, yes.
That's the beauty of this is we went through the whole, you know, field of anniversary matches. We said, yeah, these are the ones that we're watching. Now, I could have forced, you know, Mayu versus Momo upon Trent, but I didn't do that because there were just so many matches. We weren't going to watch the whole field either. There are some that we didn't talk about that are great, but
yeah, this isn't going to be the best matches in the anniversary show's history.
Yeah.
This is just four matches that we picked that we think exemplify what the anniversary show is. And we tried to spread it out a bit so it wasn't all just one wrestler. One has managed to sneak into three different matches, but it's not our fault. It's their fault for being so good.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing. It's like one of these matches for me personally is one of the greatest Stardom matches of all time. It's also the greatest of its match type that I've ever seen, and we'll get to that later on, which I'm so excited to talk about because that is a little so fun story, which I'll get to later. But that is one of the matches I reference to people all the time who want to get into Stardom. Like, watch this because this gives you a little bit of everything. Thank you, Natsu, for being in that match. you know, without her, the drink doesn't stir perfectly in terms of getting a little.
She knows how to stir drinks.
Yes, exactly. That was my crappy joke that I'm happy you pointed out. But we're gonna get into it. But before we start, the person we of course were talking about that appears in three of the four matches is none other than Yu Ishino, of course, better known to Stardom fans as Kagetsu. And we are going to, and we're saying this now, we are going to be referencing to him as Kagetsu because that is the wrestler. That is the persona that was the wrestler. I think Trent made a great point. It's kind of like how that was the role. That was the movie role, right? It goes the same. And we respect Yu Ishino and we love Yu Ishino for getting to be himself nowadays. And we're going to do so many more episodes talking about Kagetsu. But we wanted to just, put that out there now so that, you know, we want to respect him in all ways, and we want to, of course, respect what he did in the previous life, of course, as Kagetsu.
Yeah, look, for us, this is the equivalent of if we're talking about Elliot Page and we go back through his movie filmography, if we're talking about the movie Juno's the character that Elliot Page plays. Just like in this case, pro wrestling is always a little bit of a muddier situation because the wrestler can be so close to the performer that they're playing.
Yeah.
But in this situation, we've both kind of agreed we want to reference Yu Ishino as Kagetsu because Kagetsu was the character that Yu plays in this situation.
Yes.
We fully acknowledge, respect, and love the fact that he is Yu Ishino. But for the sake of these situations, we're talking about Kagetsu the wrestler.
Yeah, we're talking about the, you know, if you want to talk about pillars or Mount Rushmores in the history of Stardom, Kagetsu is right there, if not on it. I know for you,
yes,
Kagetsu is on that list. So
yes, Ryan and I did an article where we debated the Mount Rushmore of Stardom. I had Kagetsu on that list, and I would fight quite fervently to keep Kagetsu on that list.
We did a all-time Stardom draft, and Kagetsu was top three. Right.
Yes.
It was Mayu, Io, and Kagetsu, which I mean, and I know people that call Kagetsu the greatest of all time because that it's not the favorite. Like Kagetsu is his favorite wrestler of all time as well. So that plays to it. But you watch these matches back and you get you understand the brilliance that is Kagetsu as a wrestler, and I'm very excited to talk about it because we haven't got to talk about Kagetsu yet, which is
because we've covered mostly the very early stuff, and then when we have covered the period that Kagetsu's wrestling it's more just covering like briefly, oh, this was a match or two around this time. Obviously we've mentioned we are going to be covering Kagetsu, multiple episodes dedicated just to the work there. Going to pop up a lot in here. If you can't wait for those Kagetsu-centric episodes, though, but you do want to learn more about Kagetsu, my recommendation, Super Eyepatch Wolf did a fantastic video on great heels in wrestling and covered Kagetsu for about, I think it's like 5-6 minute block in that period. It's a great way just to kind of get a brief snapshot of what Kagetsu brought to the company and how good Yu Ishino was as a performer.
Yeah, admittedly, we don't know when we'll be hitting the Kagetsu-centric episodes or the Oedotai-centric episodes because we got a lot planned heading into at least to the end of May, which is very exciting. You know, I couldn't
very
say
rare
that
for us.
I couldn't say that a month ago when I was trying to tell you all what we were going to be talking about for that episode. But we're prepped and ready to go, and I think this episode, along with the next three, I'm really jazzed about. So, with all that,
I can't imagine why you're jazzed for the next three episodes.
The next three episodes are, you know, the reason this podcast exists.
we'll let you know about that at the end of this episode.
Yeah,
you have to listen to this episode.
Half the reason I wanted Stardom Road to exist was that I could just go back and watch this wrestler's matches again and again and again, which is something I already do anyway. So it's not crazy.
Now you've got a reason to go back and watch Shiki Shibasawa matches.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. But instead of pandering on, we'll get to it here. We're going to start at the 5th anniversary, January 17th, 2016. You may have heard of these two, Io Shirai versus Kairi Hojo. Obviously a big match. World of Stardom Championship on the line. For those wondering, it's one of the highest rated Stardom matches of all time here on the Handy Dandy Cage Match. But it's a major match because, one, this is like, I think this is the one Io Shirai Kairi match you can't see on Stardom World. One major one, yes. I should say, which is obviously a big deal, you know, because not only did I say it's one of the highest rated matches in Stardom's history, but it's 2/3 of Threedom, folks. Like this is the pinnacle. Step below the pinnacle because Mayu's not involved, but you get my point.
It's the Stardom rule that if you've got two out of the three members of the Threedom in a match, at least one has to be missing from Stardom World.
Yeah,
because Mayu, Io Shirai, one of their matches is on there. Yeah, it's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, those Io and Mayu ones kind of like really need to be on there because I think that's the matches everyone goes to when they're trying to get into Stardom, like more than any.
To me, they're the matches I recommend. It's a bit difficult now because like Io Shirai hasn't been in Stardom for 5-6 years now. But yeah, it's kind of if people want to know why I got into Stardom, it's like Io Shirai versus Mayu Iwatani. Just watch that trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. Io Shirai is the reason I got into it. You know, thanks for her coming to WWE. Though I wish, you know, technically, that's the funny thing. I wish she never did, but maybe I'm not here if she didn't. So I'm grateful for that. She's one of my favorites.
I'm more than here to do a couple of Rush episodes on Io Shirai if she was to come back this year.
Yeah, if she comes back, we're going to just like, we'll immediately be like, all right, let's just hit like 5 episodes in a row. Bang, 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 bang for all of you. And it'll become a weekly episode all of a sudden, a weekly show all of a sudden because of that. But let's get to the match here, of course. This was in Corken Hall, as you expect. We talked about all these shows over the past last episode.
This
was the, you know, ultimate aspect of what these anniversary shows were, and this match I think really showcases that more than any other. This is actually my first time seeing it, because again, I said I have never seen it because it wasn't on Stardom World, so I was very excited, obviously, because I've seen them wrestle. I've seen them wrestle their other matches.
You're aware of their abilities.
Yeah, I'm aware of what they can do. And I'll admit, I've always preferred this is shocking everyone I know, Mayu and Io. But
what?
But this, I think, was my favorite of these two going head to head. The interesting thing, and I don't know about you, but the interesting thing with this match is I felt like I saw Io's formula in this match more than I usually notice, because people talk about her formula all the time. I'm like, I don't know, I don't really notice it. This one, I was like, oh man, this is like down to a T of the Io Shirai formula, which is not a bad thing. The Io Shirai formula is a great formula. That's why she's one of the greats of all time. But this was like, all right, we're checking all the marks here, and it turned out to be an absolutely fantastic match.
I think a big part of this is this match feels like it's right around the time. This is Io's first defense in her second red belt reign. Just the month prior, she had defeated Miko Satomura to win the championship, the title that Kairi had lost to Miko Satomura. So it's a roundabout way of why this match was happening. And this is right where Io's about to launch into her record-breaking reign. You know, when people talk about Io Shirai and what made her so good, it's this period. And so I think she's just starting to find what works for her, what has morphed her from being a high potential young athletic freak that she was in her first reign and her first few years wrestling, to become one of the greatest of all time and probably the best women's wrestler in the world at this point in time. This match is kind of, as you said, it shows the formula, but it's where she's really starts to craft this, and not only the formula of what kind of match she puts on, but also the character, because around this time she does start to get a bit of an ego. You know, she starts to buy into the hype of her being a greatest of all time, the genius of the sky, and you see this at certain points in the match, that sort of cockiness, this arrogance that comes through, and then Kairi is fighting against that. So in many ways, this is the prototype, not necessarily the prototype, but the prototype match of the Io Shirai that everyone remembers in Stardom.
Yeah, that ego, I think, is what, you know, sadly made her perfect to be one of the few that would be successful in WWE, if that makes sense. Because her character work with that ego is at times almost second to none in terms of like that heelish character. And I think that's a lot of the reason, for example, in real life, why Julia has become a favorite of so many. It's because she has that same ego and that same cockiness, and they're very different wrestlers, but that aspect is so similar, and it's worked for both of them. And with this match, it starts off like it just, you know, it's shot out of a cannon. They're slapping the taste out of each other's mouths, and you just sit there and like, this is how I felt. It was like, this is what you want to see out of Threedom when they're wrestling, right? Yeah. You want to see that physicality. It's kind of like my mentality now when I watch Stardom, is that I always say how stars, you know, they wrestle each other. It's different from when they wrestle other people. When Threedom wrestles each other, it's different from when they wrestle the other people. The only person that, you know, can, I think, ever reach this amount of physicality and this chemistry with them, and, you know, with Mayu, it's different because she's just been here the whole time.
Yeah.
But it probably could get to. Honestly, I think that's the which is funny for this episode, because we're going to be talking about Kagetsu a lot, but that's the only other person I think that's willing to go in there and just match them in that level of physicality and authenticity, even.
Yeah. And I mean, it kind of makes sense, because you look at the roster around this time. Obviously, the Threedom, they're established, they were set up. But then your sort of next generation, your Starlight Kids, Azumi, Momo Watanabe, Jungle Kyona, they're all still coming up. Yeah, they've only just sort of joined the company. They're still finding their way. It would take a lot of gall to be able to try and step up and match their physicality, slash they're just not in the position to. Kagetsu, he's a veteran, has sort of shown what they're capable of, and is not afraid to, because obviously when Io Shirai and Kairi had left, Getsu took over as head trainer. That's the level that they are at. So you've got that trust, you've got that experience, because anyone can hit someone hard. It takes talent and experience to hit someone hard without injuring and damaging someone. So someone like the Threedom, they can trust, they have that experience with each other, Kagetsu as well. But if you want that kind of physicality in this point in time, you're looking at those four. Whereas this in 2023, you've got a lot more wrestlers feeling comfortable at just walloping each other, whether it's interfaction or otherwise.
Yeah, and I think the fun of this match, right, when I talked about the Io Shirai formula for her big epic matches. One, they went long. That is one thing she did. She went to the buzzer more times than not. As close to the buzzer as possible, I should say. But one of my favorite things that she does in her matches is doing the traveling around Korakuen specifically. And that was,
you want to talk about things that happen in every big Korakuen show, especially with Io Shirai. You got to go up to that sort of second level of the seats.
Yes, and I bring this one up because this one didn't go as it usually does. So usually, of course, Io Shirai is doing her beautiful moonsault off one of the balcony doorway things. And crashing onto a group of people. But this time, as she was ready to do it, Kairu's nowhere to be found. And Kairi fights her down, gets her down there, and she hits her diving elbow, taking everyone out, of course. Mostly just Io. That wasn't as
hit that move on one person.
Exactly. But I thought that was great because it is the change up that you kind of want, because you get so used to seeing the Io moonsault from there that it's like, okay, let me see if someone was smart enough. And of course it was Kairi to do so.
It was interesting seeing that spot too, just because I've been recently rewatching the Miko Satomura championship run with Stardom at the end of 2015. And like, because again, they go up the top there, and one thing I really liked was, like, in both of those sort of settings, Kairi's jumped off that sort of part, but she's also done the 100-yard sprint into the spear, and it was kind of cool seeing how they each took that move differently, because it is kind of like a super variation of her move, and Miko Satomura would always try and, like, just endure the shot, and so just the way they take it and sell it is quite interesting, a point of comparison, and it's just it's a really cool spot. Like, I will admit, like, when you rewatch a lot of the title matches from around this era in short succession, going up to that period does, you kind of roll your eyes and go, here we go again. Because they don't really try and hide what they're doing. There's no punching up the stairs. It's just like, I'm going to grab you by the scruff of the neck and now we'll take a walk. But it is fun seeing how they mix things up there. You know, eventually you could get to Mai, who did the fun spots where they try and hang each other off the balcony. A nice switching of pace.
Yeah, I think, and like you said, when you watch a lot of these old matches, you do tend to notice that. And I think that's why I like the matches that we picked, because they do break away from that in some ways. Now, the other singles match we will discuss does go outside, but it's in a more violent way than rather the Io Shirai.
It's not in Korakuen Hall. They can't go up to the second level.
Right, well, that too. But I kind of meant the main event, like, let's travel around the ring and, get the fans invested a little extra.
Scurrying in the case of
this match. Right, and I think that's, part of the game too. But this match was, you were talking about how they, they fought back and forth, and Kairi goes for the long spear. She eats the post on the outside, which, just brutal. This was a struggle from start to finish. It was it's why this match went 29 minutes and 31 seconds. It was anyone's game until the very end. And one of my favorite moments from the match was when Io hit the four locomotive suplexes.
Yeah.
And I just sat there. I was like, I wonder why so many people like Suzu Suzuki. I was just sitting there. I was like, there is a lot of similarities here as well. It's not just like they wear the same colors and stuff, but it's like they have some of the same moves, especially those suplexes. They have the same oomph on them that I think, and we'll get to that next match and how I will crack a joke about, I kind of understand why Kagetsu retired. But This match was just tremendous, and then Io Shirai hitting an insane elbow right? And
she was loving that around that period.
Yeah, a great one, by the way, for those who are wondering if someone could try to match Kyrie. Not to the exact Kyrie level.
It's a brilliant effort.
Kyrie gets a little more whip when she does hers. Just in, like,
I think she cares less about her body. Just that landing, like,
Yeah.
EO, you can tell, is still trying to land well enough to not destroy herself. Yeah. Which, fair play. Like,
but it's great to see.
Why wouldn't you?
One of the things I always will love is, like, when they trade moves back and forth, especially when it's as close as these two are, that it works better. Because if you see, like, you know, Julia and Micah do, it's great. Or Julia and Shuri, of course, you know, that's great. But if you see it's someone and, you know, someone else random, it's different. It's different. But this was a great touch, I thought. And then, you know, Kyrie hits her own insane elbow. Great near fall, of course. I sat there. I was like, that kick out's kind of what I was hoping for Mayu at a historic crossover. Right? Which I think we got one.
We got one.
But I didn't get two. Which, you know, I didn't expect to get two, but I would have liked it. And then the match ended with the bridge suplex, which obviously Shane Bridge hitting a picture perfect moonsault for the win. One of her best moonsaults. I actually want to just say, like, this was one of her cleanest moonsaults, because, you know, when Io does her moonsault, she just goes. Like, there's no, like, let me double check back there, make sure.
If you're not in position and you eat it poorly, it's your own fault.
Yeah. Like, she just, you know, she bounces up there and she's hitting. She's going, and it's gonna come fast and it's gonna come impactful. But this was one of the more perfect looking ones, and I thought it was a great end to a great match. What I think is probably the best I've seen from these two.
Yeah, it's quintessential Io Shirai. It's quintessential Kairi Hojo. So if you're coming into stardom, you're relatively new, and, you know, maybe you know these two from their WWE tenures and you want to see what they were like when the hype was building for them, this is a perfect kind of dip your toe into the water and see what it's all about, because you get two for the price of one. The only downside, of course, is you can't dip your toe in on Stardom World. You have to dip your toe into the seven seas. But it's the nature of the situation. Obviously, there are other matches there as well, but it is nice to sort of get them both in just as they're kind of hitting what I would say the peak period for the Freedom in Stardom, especially Io Shirai, because, as I said, this is right at the beginning of a historic reign. So if nothing else, it's worth watching to get some context for where it all began.
You know, it's funny, though, which I did not expect to come out of these four matches saying this. This was my least favorite of the four.
It's funny you say that. I actually agree.
Okay, all right. So I'm not crazy. Maybe it's the I'm just so used to the EO formula. So it's like, all right, there's not creativity in that it ruins the match, right? Because it's these two. But it's like the other three, I mean, are just so much better in their own way that, and, you know, we'll get to it. But again, a tremendous match. If you can get yourself a link, check it out. That's part of the difficult game here, you know, as we journey through Stardom's history. It's always fun to play the link game.
We always have to specify if this is a Stardom World link or a less white market link.
The good news for everybody is that the rest are Stardom World. So let's move forward here. January 21st, 2018. Stardom's 7th anniversary, of course, at Corken Hall. One of my favorite matches of all time, folks. Like, not just in Stardom, not, like, this is one of Stardom's greatest matches of all time. This is one of my favorite matches of all time. Like, if you were to ask me what would a 5-star gauntlet match look like, it's this to a T. It is Queen's Quest versus Oedo Tai, where the loser, who ultimately was pinned last, would be forced to leave the group. That was Kagetsu's idea, of course. Of course, that would be between Momo Watanabe and Tam Nakano. I mean, there is something about the energy to this match that I think you, and to play to and credit Io Shirai, I think, you know, some people may have thought I was ragging on our formula or something. With this match, she can't play to the formula because of how it's designed, and it benefits the match to a whole nother degree because, one, everyone's randomized. So each order of how they come in is randomized, which of course
quote unquote randomized.
Yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But you know, for the public, it is randomized. So when she steps into the ring, you hear the crowd roar a little bit. And it's just like, oh, here we go, right?
Yeah,
and that's a credit to who she is, of course, in her or around her. The way this match starts is beautiful. The way match ends is perfect. But before we get into it, what were your memories of the match? How do you feel about this match? Because I was very open about this, and I've been very open about this. First time I ever saw it, I was like, this is the best gauntlet match in history.
Yeah, so this is like probably a few months into me being a full-time Stardom fan. You know, I got in through to Threedom, and when I first subscribed to Stardom World, I would always watch their big matches, but I wouldn't necessarily watch the whole show. But sort of as the golden era of Oedo Tai began, which is kind of the crew that you see in this match here, that's when I kind of started to go, hang on, I need to watch everything Stardom are doing and properly invest. And so I was fully invested as this sort of show was happening, as the story was unfolding, which I know the first time I was watching it, like, I was just totally enraptured with it. I knew the result because it's Stardom. You know, these matches go up after it's happened, and you kind of have to, especially back then, you had to wait a little bit longer. But I had to find out what happened. I had to know if Tam or Momo got kicked out of their group. So I have very fond memories of this. Like you, this is a match that I have recommended to people wanting to get into Stardom or are into Stardom and want to go deeper into it. What I love about this is when you recommend someone a match, you're kind of trying to tailor it to someone's interest and picking wrestlers you think they will like. This is kind of like recommending a show to someone.
Yeah.
Because you get so many different combinations, so many different wrestlers involved, and it tells a story throughout the entire, the Stardom World stream of this is about an hour long, and it's telling a story throughout the entire period. It has ups and downs, different wrestlers doing different things. You get high speed, you get brutal, you get comedy, you get emotion. Like, it is a complete package of what pro wrestling can be in one match. And it kind of astounds me that we haven't had this kind of match replicated in future Stardom sort of stories, because they are so faction reliant, and they have liked to do these loser leaves a faction kind of story arcs before. Yeah. I'm shocked they haven't used this formula and just stuck to the elimination tag, because they're great. But I feel like there's so much more storytelling you can tell in this formula. One person from each team in the ring, one gets eliminated, another person comes in. There's a lot of drama. You get heroes a bit more convincing. Like, Kagetsu carries the team.
Oh, my God.
You know, if it wasn't for what Kagetsu did against Io and then Viper, takes out their two Queen's Quest two strongest members by themselves. You know, without that, it's no shot. You get that kind of heroic story arc. You get a whole bunch of different things. It is just a quintessential what wrestling can be as a story and as drama.
Yeah, I like how you say it's like a whole show. I usually go to three, maybe four matches now, especially after the past couple of years. I've added another or two to, like, I think now I'd probably give Shuri and Julia from as another match to.
Yeah.
Recommend, but I think like my top four is any Io Mayu match, like truthfully, like any. I usually just do the double title one, because one, it's on Stardom World, two, it's meaningful for a number of reasons. So I usually lean on that one. This one always, because you get a taste of what Stardom is in every single way, like I said earlier. And you get to see the best of the best throughout the match. The only person this match doesn't have, truthfully, is Mayu Iwatani. Like, that's in terms of like where Stardom was at that time, that's all it's really missing. But it's okay, because again, you get to see the future, the present, now the past, obviously, for those who watch the CEO and Kagetsu, of course.
That's the one difficult thing about this in recommending to people in 2023, because like you'd be like, oh, you know, if you want to get an idea of what Stardom is, here's this match. And unfortunately, it's like, oh, you know, can I see more Io matches at the moment? No, she's in WWE.
Yeah.
Can I see Kagetsu matches? No, they're retired. Natsu, oh, no, she's in NOAH, apparently. Can I see more Hana matches? Like, it, unfortunately, it's, you know, really the only people sticking have stuck around are Tam and Momo. Surprisingly, given that they're both the final two, and well, Hazuki,
and Azumi, who's of
yes,
course
yes,
now
sorry, and Azumi, yeah,
which is why I kind of like to play with it, like, and that's why I always tell people to also with Stardom is to watch through people's careers, because with especially, I think Momo is always a great example because she's still so young now. But this was when she was entering the, you know, the mega run and where she was going, and Tam's so fun to see too, because it's like how different she is now. It almost makes me laugh in a lot of ways. But this is like one of her first great performances, also.
I think it's her first great one, at least in Stardom, because like she barely wrestled before she got injured and then took time off and then came back for this match, and her work outside of Stardom were. Yeah, the deathmatch stuff is kind of fun.
I was gonna say it's this, the exploding, you know, the big explosion with the bat. That's I always love to go back and watch the Arisa match, and then you know pretty much everything she's done since, really taking over the Angels, especially. Pretty much everything is meaningful for her now.
And if it's not, she makes it meaningful.
That she does. That she does. But also, I think. You hit it on the head with the drama, is that they never lost that feeling of drama throughout the match. Like from the get-go, you felt it. You felt the importance, which is hard to do, I think. That's why this match works over, for me, the Captain's Falls matches that they lean on more so now. And I hope someday they do go back to this. I understand you don't always want to, especially because these matches do take up time, but if you're going to main event a show with it, that's okay, right? Yeah. And they don't do that anymore. But if remember when, for example, easily when Queen's Quest and Oedo Tai had the Captain's Fall match, and of course Momo would go on to turn, that would have been a perfect spot for it. And now with the story that where Momo ultimately turned, it's a little different, but it would have been. It would have worked. It would have worked very well. Perfectly. But let's get into this match. This isn't about that now, but it's about then. And it starts off with Azumi and Chris Wolf.
Don't blink.
And within 8 seconds, Chris Wolf is eliminated. Azumi, you know, does what Azumi does. Gets the big shock pin. And it's like one of those like, oh, we're in this. We're in this. And that's where the drama just, it's all in from there.
It's fascinating because this whole match, like, Oedo Tai the heels, and look, they're the fun, you know, vagabond heels. They're not the decidedly evil heels that they are now. But, like, they are the underdogs throughout this entire series. You know, they lose someone straight off the bat. Their second person is Natsu Samir, who isn't exactly a world beater. They're kind of hanging on from the beginning, and you know, even though they're doing everything they can to essentially cheat and be heels, you can't help but feel kind of like you want to root for them over Queen's Quest, because they're the ones coming in with the heavy hitters. They've got Io Shirai, they've got Viper, Azumi, who, okay, wasn't a world beater at this stage, is dangerous. Momo Watanabe, who was right on the cusp of about to go on her world beating run, and you knew it at this stage when you were watching Stardom around this time. You knew Momo was about to launch off, and even Hazuki is someone who, you know, was sort of just waiting for the opportunity to step up another level. They had a strong squad compared to Oedo Tai.
Yeah, I think, and that's the funny thing, you bring up Hazuki, who was waiting for that opportunity, and of course should go on to get it in Oedo Tai, and I think that's when, for a lot of people, maybe Oedo Tai reached the peak. I know for, with Hana, of course, but during that time where Kagetsu and Hazuki were really, you know, pushing that group forward, that's of course I think one of those most popular,
arguably the best in-ring period.
I'd
say the golden era of this period was the most fun the group was, but when you had like the combo of especially. When you've got the combo of Kagetsu and Hazuki just wrecking everything, like a lot of special stuff there.
Yeah, we'll get to them in a little bit. Natsu Sumire, Natsu was able to defeat Azumi in a good 5 minute stretch where, you know, the funny thing with Natsu, right? And it's funny that she has become relevant again after taking so much time off, is that people do play to her comedic side a lot, and she plays to it obviously all the time. But she's a very solid wrestler. That's never been in doubt. And I think this 5 minutes with Azumi really spoke to that, because they kind of really started the match in a lot of ways. They started the feeling. Yes, Azumi pins Chris Wolf in 8 seconds, but after that, it's like, okay, now where are we going? And Oedo Tai, of course, down one, has to kind of wrestle, not desperate, but all right, we need to you know, get ahead of this, and you know, Natsu's able to get that elimination that they very much needed.
Azumi and Natsu had just a wonderful rivalry through this sort of period. Like, if you didn't watch Stardom back then, you are missing out, because Natsu was a fantastic comedy wrestler. This is peak Azumi, kind of calling everyone grandmas and leaning into she's young, everyone else's old gimmick. And Natsu was the perfect foil for that. Their exchange in this match isn't subtitled, unfortunately, but you do get some of their matches on Stardom World where, like, they've just gone like, we have to subtitle this. This is too good not to. Which I do wish we got a bit more, but I'm thankful when we get it. These two, they know each other so well, and they just play to each other's strengths.
So as I said, with Azumi being eliminated, was the roar of the crowd as the realization that it was now time for Io Shirai to step up. And I think that really does play to the popularity and excitement that just surrounded Io Shirai at that time. Of course, Wonder of Stardom champion at the time.
Was the top champion, because Tony was never really there.
Exactly. That's why she had the reign that she did. And that's why this was the main event of the anniversary show in a lot of ways. And you just feel like the intensity start up, but then Natsu goes to the comedic side of things, and she's like, oh, you know what? I don't think I want to wrestle Io Shirai. How many do you have? Three? That's not great.
And they did subtitle this part, which I was very thankful for.
How many do we have? Three? All right, that's enough. She lays down and she's like, all right, pin me. Get over this. I don't want to fight Io Shirai. And then does the, of course, tries to cradle her for a quick pin. And great near fall. Like, this is a legitimately great near fall. Because on these, you know, you can have, like, the two and it's like, whatever. But Io count kicks out, perfect timing, perfect reaction of, like, oh, my God. Which
Natsu would have had her if it wasn't for the fact she had to wrestle a match straight before. I believe that in my heart.
And this plays to the Io Shirai conversation that we were having earlier, where her ego perfectly played into this moment that she was like, oh, sure, you actually don't want to wrestle me. Of course you don't. And, you know, they'd have a great 4 minutes or so of back and forth, which I was really impressed by on rewatch, because you remember the big time match that Io and Kagetsu have in the middle of this, because it really, it not only carries it, but it's like, if you were to take that aspect out of this match, that would be its own, like, top tier match in itself. But without that, you have Natsu, of course, working down Io and just trying. That's really what Natsu was in there for, just trying to tire her. Listen, I'm not going to beat her, but I'll tire her down. I'll do my best. I'll do my best. And she did.
Of course, she
ultimately had to tap out, but very exciting couple of minutes there, playing to the fact that Io's Io, as well as Natsu being Natsu.
Yeah, massive mismatch, and they played that off wonderfully. Natsu did her best. Like, when she hit the Bronco Buster, she threw herself into there. She didn't get to do the little, you know, combo at the end, because she just launched herself at EO. It was, you knew what was coming here. But the beauty of these kind of matches, and you do get them in the elimination tags where there's over the top rope, like, when Natsu rolled her up, you could have almost bought in maybe they're going for the joke elimination, get EO out, sort of change the momentum. So you can bite a little bit more on some of these falls, as opposed to if EO and Natsu just wrestled one-on-one, you know what's going on. Here there's a little bit more up in the air.
Exactly. Now Kagetsu's up. Kagetsu and Io Shirai, as I was talking about. This was this was that world class wrestling that Stardom mm-hmm. delivered. And I think this is part of the reason I love this match so much, is that, you know, Io couldn't play to the formulaic style against one of the top dogs, right? Like, and as I also said earlier, Kagetsu and Threedom all worked so well together, and this was one of the clear cases of that, where you just see them mesh perfectly. You see on display what is the top of Stardom. Sure, they're not the world of Stardom champion, but who's the top of Stardom? It's these two in a lot of ways. And I think with how good Kagetsu is at this time, right, this is the top of the game, Kagetsu. Yeah. Like, this is the best of the best. You just kind of see that take over this match. It's not the Io Shirai game anymore. No. You said this earlier. This is Kagetsu's match. And this was the stipulation that Kagetsu made, after all. So it's only right that that is the main middle of this match. Yes, we're going to get to Momo and Tam later, and that's going to be, you know, a crazy dramatic ending closing minutes. But Kagetsu's got to get us there. And with this match, the Io Shirai, or this aspect, the excitement of Kagetsu hitting the mist, then eliminating Io Shirai with the choke slam onto the crowd of people. That is perfect, because you don't get to see Io Shirai get one-upped a lot back then. Doesn't happen. Kagetsu not only one-upped Io Shirai, it was almost the dominant way of doing so, with that choke slam out to the floor.
As dominating as an over-the-top rope elimination can be in these kind of matches, because they are often
I like it in these.
Yeah, it can be a cheap way to get rid of a top star. But this wasn't you've slipped and you've fallen out kind of thing. This was Kagetsu just setting her up, and, you know, the mist ties into Oedo Tai kind of using the underhanded tactics, but the choke slam was definitive. And yeah, the slamming her onto the crowd, a lot of who were Queen's Quest members as well, is a nice little show of dominance to kind of announce that, you know, Oedo Tai maybe are in control here up until you hear who's next.
Yeah, so who's next, of course, ultimately is Viper. And Viper at this time she was presented perfectly as like this dominant force on this team. I wouldn't say a monster, because that's not really how Stardom projects people, but she is a powerhouse. She's a dominant force, and she's going to be tough to get out, especially now that Kagetsu's coming off a 8-minute, you know, exhibition with Io Shirai, going 100 miles per hour. Right.
Yeah.
And that allows, and I think this was, you know, great showing by Viper for the next 10 minutes. And it plays, of course, like you said, to the game of how Kagetsu had to survive to help Oedo Tai just get to that point. Because you get set back with that Chris Wolf elimination, but it's evened out because of the Herculean effort, the superhero effort, of Kagetsu with this 10-minute draw. This is as good as what we just saw in a lot of ways, because of the differences, the struggle that Kagetsu had wrestling against Viper. I loved every second of it, because there's that moment where, oh, there's desperation now. Viper's going to eliminate Kagetsu, and Oedo Tai has to play Oedo Tai games and get, you know, pull Kagetsu out of the pin after, was it a power bomb?
Kagetsu jumped off the top rope,
got counted into a power bomb. Yes, which was a great power bomb, by the way. Yeah. Again, playing, and I didn't say it earlier, but there's a reason Kagetsu had to retire due to neck problems. Which multiple times in this match, I was like, all right, I get it. But that the drama, of course, of Oedo Tai's desperation, because they're starting to feel, if this happens, we're doomed. And that plays to what will ultimately be a draw 10 minutes. That's the part of this match that I think plays so well, is each segment's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And Kagetsu getting to that was...
Yeah, this was all about survival for Kagetsu, because after wrestling Io Shirai for that kind of time, like, that she was done, and then to have to deal with Viper, a completely different wrestler who could just use the size and strength game to just take any energy Gagetsu had left. And the one thing I do like this segment. The one thing I think hurts it is the Oedo Tai tactics are good some of the time. Like when Gagetsu gets knocked out of the ring and they have to catch
her,
put her back up, and that happens twice. I love that. The saving her from the pinfall, I like that. But when they kept running into the ring and like trying to double team Viper, the one thing I didn't like about that is you've just got Queen's Quest standing on the outside looking like nutties. You know, like get in the ring and, you know.
That's a classic to this day, to be fair.
Yeah, but like I think in this situation was particularly frustrating because of the setup, and like I get why they did it. That was the one thing I wish they'd done a little bit better. But as, in terms of storytelling, it's done fantastically. And yeah, Getsu endures 10 minutes, knocks out not only Io Shirai, but Viper, their two biggest weapons.
Viper looked like she was about to get the win as the time expired, which, you know, just for that. And then we're left to Hazuki and Hana Kimura, who have just this wonderful chemistry of beating the crap out of each other in every, it was from their early days to the very end. They were so great at this. And so, you know, you had that again, amazing effort from Kagetsu. How can you follow that up? You just have these two, you know, young up and comers go out there and try. It almost didn't even matter. Like the match didn't even matter to them in a lot of ways, because that's what it felt like. It just felt like these two were rivals who wanted to destroy one another. And the end of this is terrifying for many reasons. Of course, which was a sunset flip power bomb to the outside off the turnbuckle, Hazuki hitting it to Hana Kimura. Hana Kimura crashing down to the floor. There was definitely scare there.
She got rocked.
Yeah. She was down. She, you know, huffing and puffing. Like she was there for a little bit because
it's quite scary when they set up for the next segment of this match, and like they're ready to go, and you just hear her sort of wheezing on the outside quite frantically. And even the camera kind of, I'm surprised they did actually, camera comes out and pans to her, and you actually see Jungle there trying to comfort her, because like you could tell instantly something wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
But you weren't sure if it was just kind of shocked from the impact of it.
Sure.
But, thankfully, she was up and about for the final stanza after that. But it was...
It was scary.
Yeah. I'm glad like I can rewatch this knowing that she was okay after it, ultimately. But when I first watched it, it was very... Not confronting necessarily, but it is a scary moment for sure.
It was one of the... I know a lot of people have complaints about like when so many wrestlers are there to like take the falls that they do. This was one of those that I was like, this is why.
This is
why, because you don't want them. And I think some people don't notice like that the floors aren't completely matted like you see in professional wrestling here in the States, especially that right.
Nothing.
No, that mat then it was not a mat. It was just there for decoration. That's what that was.
I don't know why they bothered sometimes to pull it away to enhance the impact of a move on the outside. Like, you're not feeling that.
And I think this match also captured kind of how great they both were at such young ages and where they'd go on to be in their respective ways. I mean, you know, we are still talking about how when Hazuki brings that, you know, rage out of her, it's almost like no one's better at times. Yeah. And as we know with what Hana Kimura would go on to do, she was so great at that. She brought out the best of everyone, and that's what they did here with each other.
It tied into each other's strengths. Like when Hana could go at someone and not have to worry too much about technique, but just go into raw brutality, that always favored her, especially in the Oedo Tai era for her. Same with Hazuki. Like this period in Oedo Tai, Hazuki, she was a very talented wrestler, but she was at her best when it was almost like forgetting the intricacies and just saying, I want to hit you as hard as I can. These two, you feel like they were backstage going, let's give each other hell. Because the Viper Gagetsu period was a slower stanza for this match. It was sort of that, not, it wasn't a dip in terms of quality, but just dip in terms of pace. And then these two come in and just switch it up to another gear, which is what makes this whole match so great, because each period it feels different. It does different things.
Yeah, it was the perfect way to get to the final chapter because you want, I think having those two be fresh to go, right? Like doing the double draw, but two different ways of doing the draw to have, okay, now here's the drama. One of these two are leaving their group at the end. And watching this, I have such an appreciation for where Momo was already in her career back then. At the time of this match, she was 17.
Hadn't graduated high school, as we hear in the post-match.
Yeah, and with Momo, it's like, and I say this all the time on other shows, it's like you don't realize how young she is because of all that she's accomplished. Yeah. And obviously, there were still some places she had to grow. I think now we, you know, you and me agree that she's the best she's ever been because she has that character aspect to her now and that ego that you know, I think Io Shirai had in some ways, the heelish ego, which funny enough she had to end up on a way to tie to get that.
She showed patches of it in Queen's Quest, especially in the middle of her white belt run.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why people remember that run so fondly for her character side, because it was when we got to see the best of Momo pre-Oedo Tai character-wise.
Exactly. And I think after that's when it obviously fell off. She was just the leader, and you watch her Tommy climb up and eventually Saya. But in this, you just realize like how special in-ring-wise she is as a pro wrestler. And I said this on Twitter today. It's like Io Shirai at 18 years old is better than most wrestlers are ever. Like,
Momo, ever. 18, you mean?
Momo, sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
Io.
Well, I don't remember that off the top of my head. I'm probably not far off there, but Momo, you know, at 18 years old is better than so many. And you just kind of felt that in this and how we talked about, you know, Tam wasn't Tam back then. Tam was still very fresh, very new, very much trying to find her way in all of this. And
first match back from injury too. Yes. So and she hadn't had a chance to build into it really in ring.
The one thing that Tam did have though was always that emotional side. That's the reason she lays into it now, even though she is a much more crafted wrestler. And it makes these final minutes the perfect amount of drama with, you know, just and to add, to remind people, of course, this was Oedo Tai. This was Kagetsu's idea, not Queen's Quest. So it's just like, oh, are they gonna get one upped here? And of course they did in the end, as everyone knows, where, you know, Momo will go on to lead Queen's Quest not too long after with Io Shirai. Eventually leaving in 2018. But tremendous stuff. And like you said, probably the first great moment of Tam Nakano's career.
Yeah, especially in ring. Like her and Oedo Tai was a lot of fun. You got a lot of great little backstage things. But in terms of the in ring, yeah, you can see the elements are there for what Tam would become. She's still a long way from perfecting it because it did take her a few years to really get comfortable in the ring. So it is fun going back and watching this iteration of her just trying to hang with Momo Watanabe. You can see the kicks aren't quite as strong or as crisp, but she's throwing everything she can. And that it works for the story that they're telling. Because if she was, you know, peak Tam Nakano here, you wouldn't have the same drama. She's someone who's barely wrestled, coming back from injury in a situation she really didn't want to be in, you know, and having to just fight and claw, just to hope to survive against someone who is leagues above her at this point in the ring. And that's, again, where the Oedo Tai, even though they were heels, you're sympathetic towards them, you're cheering for them, even when you know the result, because they play that kind of underdog role so well. They're just devious rogues in doing it.
Oedo Tai's heels always, well, this Oedo Tai's heels is always so funny to me, because like they're only heels because they cheat. Or they cheat to get ahead.
Yeah.
Any other reason, they are not heels. You want to cheer them because, like you said, they're underdogs. They're just trying to succeed. And unless, you know, Kagetsu doesn't need to, but, you know, everyone else, like that's the beauty of this group is it's no one's perfect, right? In that there's a reason Kagetsu's leading it because. You know, you're leading, and I think that's the beauty of where Hana Kimura would go with Tokyo Cyber Squad. It's kind of the same thing, right? Is that you're leading a new group like that of not Tokyo Cyber Squad's more of like a misfit type thing, because everyone's a little almost drastically different. Ueno Tai has a little more, you know, semblance to it, but it's perfect in that you connect with them. And you know, with Tam Nakano losing here, Momo hitting the meteor off the top to get the win, which was you know, picture perfect, and still one of my favorite things she does, you know, even though she doesn't lean on it as much as she did back then. For those who are wondering, she leaned down, and as much as I think Sasha Banks once upon a time did at times, but it's a good impactful move. And you get the emotional side of it. And, you know, Momo is in two ways. You're getting Tam now going to eventually go into the level where she grows into where she eventually becomes, where she eventually is now. And then you have Momo, who's rising up the ranks and getting prepared to, you know, be next Wonder of Stardom champion. So it's a perfect story from start to finish in this match.
And look, obviously, like, it is kind of obvious, but you do really should stick around for the post-match stuff.
Yes.
Because even if you're not following through chronologically, so, like, what happens next might not be as high on the list of interest. There's so much character work here, because you've got Io Shirai, you know, commiserating with Tam, Kagetsu apologizing because it was Kagetsu's idea and let the team down. Io offering a spot to Queen's Quest, going to Tam. Momo interferes because she's like, hey, I got something to say here. I want to challenge you for your belt. And in doing so, perhaps costs Queen's Quest getting Tam, because Mayu is nowhere to be seen until after the second request. Yeah. So if Momo hadn't got in the way, Tam might not have had a choice. But then you got Mayu coming in, proclaiming there's only three factions, to which Jungle's like, oi. there is also Team Jungle, and then Mayu saying, if you're lonely, we'll bring Peace Armor, and then looking around, hang on, where is the little plush panda that Tam had around this time? Of course, Chris Wolf walked off with it, but yeah, it just it showcases everyone perfectly. It's just, it's emotional, but it's also funny, and just encapsulates.
It's worth noting Mayu Iwatani didn't give Tam a chance to make a decision. She just took her.
No. Yeah. Literally kidnapped Tam at the end. Because Tam's like, I don't know which way I want to go yet. Yeah. I'm still recovering from the heartbreak of being kicked out of a faction I didn't want to leave. And then when both are offering, you know, come with us, Mayu's just like, too long, you're with us, and steals her. And, which, again, ties it, not that we're talking about this now, it ties in beautifully to Tam's story through the next part with Stars. You know, she got dragged in by someone who was doting over her, and then over the years Mayu finds new toys to play with, which leads to Tam kind of feeling left out and wanting to go and form her own faction.
The never-ending career of Tam, always connected. But that was like nearly 40 minutes talking about the gauntlet, so we can
sorry guys on.
But everyone should,
there's so much there.
Everyone should go out of their way to check it out. Honestly, I mean, if you got to this point, you've already heard what we've had to say, but I hope that you watched it before listening. I think first spoilers. First view, I hope like you heard some of the beginning and you're like, oh, I need to check this out. Then I'll listen to the rest. That's what you did. But we'll move ahead here. Another World of Stardom title match. One of what I think is not only the best matches of Hazuki's career, but even Kagetsu's, who, you know, Kagetsu has a very long list, of course, that we've hinted at. We will be going to down the line, but it was Kagetsu, the World of Stardom champion, defending against, you know, protege number two in a way to tie Hazuki. Mm-hmm. This was at Eddie on Osaka Arena number two.
Yeah.
So a little different change up here. This was, you know, as we talked about, one of the many, or I don't know, I forget if this was the year that they did two anniversary shows or not, but this was in Osaka. So. This was in Osaka, and this was, I think, as violent as you'd hope for when you kind of see these two names and you think of what Hazuki was, especially in 2019. I mean, that 2019 year for Hazuki, despite not getting a top title, is unreal. Like, this match, you know, really kicked off her year, and I sing the praises of that match with Arisa later in the year to no end. But you know, this is where she found her game. She found who she was full form. And I think it's because of this match that, you know, you saw that confidence come out, and you do now. You do now when, you know, when she's wrestling. Now when she's wrestling, you just see her as like one of the top stars, obviously, because that's who she is. And she doesn't need to be a, that's the one thing with Suzuki. She doesn't need to be a leader now because she's in control of herself. She doesn't, and she, that's the fun part about Suzuki, is she always feels like she's just kind of a rogue in Stars nowadays. It's like, yeah, I mean, I tag with Koguma, sure, and I'll do all these things, but I'm still Suzuki. Like, you think of Suzuki, you think of the Oedo Tai, and I think that's the beauty of what she's turned her character into nowadays. But this match, you know, without this match, she's not where she is now in terms of being a pro wrestler. And I think that's a lot of the respect needs to go to Suzuki and where they went here. It was like, all right, show me you're on this level. That's what this match was. It was a test for Suzuki, and she absolutely did.
And that's Kagetsu's entire reign, and really the last sort of year and a half, 2 years of Kagetsu's time in Stardom. You know, top champion, and basically waiting for someone to prove that they're ready to take on the mantle as Stardom's top performer. You know, whenever Kagetsu wrestled a championship match, it was a case of bring everything you have, try and beat me. When you fail, you need to go back and get better, get good. And Suzuki throws everything that she can at Kagetsu, gets close. Ultimately, Kagetsu wins because of the experience, the veteran savvy, pulls a couple of, you know, roguish tricks that Suzuki probably should have been prepared for, given that, you know, Suzuki knows Kagetsu better than anyone at this point. But it just speaks to the character that Kagetsu was playing around this time. And someone like Suzuki could really step up and match what Kagetsu wanted from her championship reign.
Yeah, and with this match, I think why I love this one so much is that you kind of felt the respect Kagetsu had for Suzuki from start to finish, especially with how the match closed with the was it Oedo Coaster, Death Valley Driver, and, you know, Kagetsu choking out Suzuki. I think that was like the perfect, like, you know, you did a lot today. You showed me, but I am going to ultimately end this match in the most devastating way possible. And I think that was just like, for me, it adds like the perfect exclamation point to a match where Kagetsu is throwing Suzuki around the arena in a lot of ways, literally into a million chairs. That's what I was talking about earlier when this went outside the ring, as you would in world title matches, but it was different. It was different in a lot of ways with how Kagetsu attacked it.
No audience member was safe. I think everyone in the arena had to get out of their chairs at least once because they went through all four corners of the outside area. And it wasn't just, I'll throw you into a couple of rows. It was, I'm going to throw you like a bowling ball and see if I can get you to the very end of the rows. It was fantastic. And it played into their strengths as well, because this was just a beat down, brutal fight. You know, you could tell like the friendship was there because they held nothing back. They weren't afraid to be a bit stiff, maybe leave a few bruises.
It's that freedom. It's that the Stars thing that I talk about. That's what these two had. Like, we are going to go that extra mile against one another because we're that comfortable with one another.
Yeah. And look, it doesn't have the grandeur of a Currican Hall, but if you put this match in Currican Hall, I think people would... Like, people still consider this a really good match, but I think if you put it in Currican Hall, it'd be rated a lot higher than it actually is.
Yeah, I think with Suzuki, the beauty of what Suzuki does, and you know, correct me if you don't feel the same, is that her style translates to the smallest of arenas to the biggest. And that's why I think she's one of the best house show workers nowadays, is because she doesn't... While yes, they will take days off in terms of not going to that 101%, her top percent still better than, or her house show percent is still better than the majority. And this is actually, in terms of singles matches, this is Hazuki's number 2 highest rated singles match, which number 1 is the one that I love so much, which we will be talking about in a number of episodes. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll get to that. It is interesting that her highest since coming back is the match with Julia from the five star, which I think is tremendous as well.
That's a worthy number. Yeah, that's a worthy best match since coming back, I think.
Yeah, and well, if we want to count the, I'm not going to count this one, but the Hanakamura Memorial tag is also up there. But that is the highest. And I love her title challenge against Utami as well. But I think that one with Julia is definitely deserving of being that top spot.
I think it leans into her style more, because Julia loves someone like Azuki, where you can throw everything, caution to the wind. So they work well with each other, and it is a feud I'm looking forward to seeing revisited many, many times.
Also, with this match, I think one of my takeaways, and I've watched many Kagetsu matches since, getting into stardom, the kicks that Kagetsu has are among the elite. But when you see Kagetsu and you think of the career, you don't think the style is, like a Momo, right? Momo's kicks and Takumi Roha's kicks. You don't think of that with Kagetsu, but I put these kicks up against anyone. Like, these are, they're loud, they're impactful, but they're just part of the great repertoire that she has.
I mean, in many ways, you could argue Kagetsu is one of the greatest all-round wrestlers, because Kagetsu can do your brawling side
effect.
Yeah, has the high impact moves like the Death Valley Driver, can do 450 splashes, which I think when you look at someone like Kagetsu in the body shape, you're not expecting that kind of high flying aerial athleticism, but nails it every time. And then you've got the striking side of things like. And the submissions as well. Finishes with the submission, a brutal-looking submission. Really, like, whatever you want, whatever you need from a Kagetsu can deliver and does deliver.
Yep. And I think this match, you see a lot of Kagetsu in Hizuki now in terms of just, like, that leadership mentality. It's kind of why I love seeing Hizuki in matches that don't involve Mayu, and this is gonna, let me explain, is that she gets to take on that Kagetsu role with the other Stars members, right? That you saw with the Wado tie back then, because Mayu's obviously the leader, that's unquestioned, but Hizuki's there to train, to teach, and that's why they played off
to lead, because Mayu's
Mayu's busy. Mayu's busy. I wish we did do more faction stuff like that too. Like, that is the fun of all this. But let's move on to our final match here.
Just one final thing. Like, obviously, one of the reasons why I think we both wanted to feature this is because when people want to go back and watch the old stardom, so often it's just like, go and watch the Kuroken Halls. That's where all the big stuff happened. But you do have to be careful, because if you only watch the Kuroken Halls, you miss a match like this. So obviously Kuroken's the best place to go, but keep your eye out on stuff like Cage Match or whatever for the odd match like this one that kind of pops out. And you've got to go and watch these ones.
Speaking of just not doing all Kurokens, the final match that we are featuring here today is from January 26, 2020, as Kagetsu's final match in Stardom against Momo Watanabe and Jungle Kiona, teaming with Mayu Iwatani. This is, and for me, it's like, this is like, I've seen people toss this around. This is like that type of comfort match, if that makes sense, right? Like, it's one that you can go and watch at any time. And it never gets old.
No.
Two, I feel like you almost notice something different every time. Right, it's like for people that have like comfort moves or whatever, and you rewatch them. This is that type of match, because not only is it a feel good type match, and you have just this wonderful ceremony at the end where everyone celebrates and so on and so forth, but you have the beginning where Mayu and Kagetsu are matching, and they have the masking, like, that brings the biggest smile to my face. Also, some of my favorite Mayu Iwatani gear ever.
Oh, yeah.
It was a one-timer gear, unfortunately, so we'll never get it again. But she's matching Kagetsu with the baggy pants, and that's the funny thing they play off. It was like, should I, you know, this is one time, but do I look good? Yeah, I think I look good. But the match is so, it's not as comedic as you think it is based off of how the pre and post now Kagetsu's career is. And that's the beauty of it. It's like, when it gets down to the action, it's just a fantastic tag team match between four of the best. Yes, see, I gave Jungle Kiona her credit. And this, honestly, and I, you know, when this match ended, I was like, this might be Jungle's biggest win. Like, truthfully, like, in terms of meaning, like, because I think this means as much to her probably as any world title or wonder, because she pinned Kagetsu and Kagetsu's, you know, last Stardom match. And that's meaningful.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And, like, the fact that she got picked for that spot, not only to be in the match, but to get the victory, because it could have very easily given it to Momo Watanabe, who could have given it to, you know, even Hana Kimura could have got in that last match kind of opportunity, and it would have made sense, it would have worked. But, you know, Kagetsu picked both of them for a reason. And you could tell how much it meant to them and how much fun they were having out there. Yes, it's not a comedic match, but there's just enough comedy, be it intentional or unintentional, that just makes this so magical. It's not pure comedy. You get good, great wrestling as well, but it's just all mixed together, which makes it such a good comfort watch, because it's not as serious, it's not as intense, it's not as dramatic as the previous three matches we've talked about. It is a bit more lighthearted, but it's not at the sacrifice of the quality of the in-ring product.
Yeah, I think with the four matches we pick, you get a little bit of everything in terms of, like, the ultimate seriousness of, like, that gauntlet and where that goes, but which also involves some comedy itself. Two world title matches and then this that brings it all together, of kind of that emotional and the family side of what Stardom has. Yeah. You know, you don't get to see it as much nowadays, but you can feel it with this Stardom rosters, is that when they get to spend a lot of time together, they are families, and you see that in their promos and the way they talk about each other, right? It's like, I think people, you know, they thought there was a shift when, say, DDM joined, and I think that the funny part is about DDM is, like, they're the one that makes it seem like a family more than anyone else nowadays.
You can see it in all of the outside the ring content. Yeah. You know, like, even at the award show that just happened recently, when Tam went up and received her awards, Julia's the one sort of bawling her eyes out because of how much the family aspect is. Yes, they're rivals in the ring, but that's what makes them so close outside of the ring.
Yeah, and this match, I love seeing Jungle and Momo together. Because, you know, they weren't together at their prime, but they were so good in this one, like, opportunity to see them. And I was thinking about this when, you know, we talk about how hard of a year 2020 was for them. And, you know, Kagetsu retiring, you know, Risa retiring, Hana's passing. And I think we, you know, a lot of us focus on those three because they were all bang, 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 bang. But losing Jungle Kiona is gigantic in its own respect, and of course hers was different because it was an injury, it wasn't a retirement. You know, it was very different, so I think that's why she doesn't get lumped in, but ultimately she never came back and she was gone and from Stardom, and, you know, she only just really came back recently, and even then it's like, you know, she's on her last chapter, really.
I thought you were going to say last legs, and I was going to say dude, phrasing.
No, I was not going to say that. even though she did get a big win, which was very nice.
Arguably her biggest win happened just a few nights ago.
Yeah, biggest win in terms of, like, the stage, but I do think, like, in terms of the appreciation that she may have, this was it. And I think the way her and Kagetsu closed the match was excellent. Like, it brought it all together, because it's like, oh, in the end, this is still a match. This is still a meaningful match, a moment, and, you know, hitting again Kagetsu's neck. Like, there was so many times where this was like, we're almost there. Like, really, we're almost there. This is the reason retirement's happening. And you know, Jungle made sure to end it with
"You're not coming back." Ganzo bomb, power bomb, Jungle Buster. Like,
and
that,
and those power bombs were they were so great. And you know, Mayu had a great save at one point to keep the match going on one of the power bombs. And I was like, you know, like I think at that point, Kagetsu would have been pretty okay if you just let the match end. Because I'm think done. Jungle did such a great job, and I think Kagetsu did just as good a job of making all of that feel impactful. It's a shame that, you know, we didn't get Jungle to elevate after that, because more so than anything, injuries did, you know, ruin any
and
shot
the
of
timing
that.
Because like the next week she was meant to be facing Mayu Iwatani for the red belt in Nagoya, and look, it's in Nagoya, she was losing the match, like that's the
she was,
but like that was going to be a big moment, and coming in with the refreshment of, you know, the roster with the like someone like Kagetsu leaving, Jungle was going to not necessarily be winning top championships, but was going to have an important role as that gatekeeper and bringing people to the next level, which ultimately we never really got to see come to fruition. Also, Jungle and Kagetsu just had fantastic chemistry in this match. They had a red belt match just before the Kagetsu Hazuki match. Whenever they fought in the 5-star Grand Prix, they were always just perfect. Like, obviously, both of these wrestlers they have great matches with just about anyone, but their chemistry together isn't necessarily spoken of as much because Jungle isn't the highlight wrestler of a Mayu or an Io Shirai.
Yeah,
but I'll always support her.
I think the interesting thing with Jungle, and of course Jungle will be brought up in many episodes in the future. She'll have her own. She'll have her own batch, because you know, as me and Trent have talked about off air, we know she's closer to retirement than she is to the start of her career. So I think that's when we'll really, you know, give her the main focus, respectfully. But This was like, for me, it was the ultimate point. And this was, you know, this match was supposed to be about not about Jungle, but about Kagetsu.
Yeah.
But it almost did feel like it was about Jungle too, because it was validation in a lot of ways. Like Kagetsu, Kagetsu had Jungle pin her and on the final one. And I think that's very nice. And just to think about, and you want to watch the full match, you want to watch the pre-match, you want to watch every moment from this video, because it all makes it better. And I think the post-match is absolutely wonderful. You know, you have Kagetsu on the mic talking about, you know, it's my last match. I should be sad, but I am, you know, filled with joy. And I think that really captures where Kagetsu, or who Kagetsu was as a entertainer overall, is that no matter what, it was always about giving the best show. And on the final match here, it was perfect.
Yeah, and you could see how much love the roster had for Kagetsu. Like, and I think this was really important, because it was around this time there were reports that the reason Kagetsu was leaving was because she wasn't liked backstage as a trainer and thought it worked him too hard. And not that we're in a position to know the truth, because we're not, but you look at how this entire retirement month and a half played out, and the outpouring of love and care towards Kagetsu. Yeah, there might have been one or two people who didn't like Kagetsu's training style, but they were hard to find amongst the people that was in the ring at the end there.
Yeah, this is a big, big, gigantic family. This wasn't like... I don't really believe much of the this is why Kagetsu's retiring. I think that neck was done in a lot
Kagetsu
of ways.
Kagetsu was retiring years ago. Io Shirai talked Kagetsu into sticking around. That is forgotten so much.
It is.
Yeah. The neck was screwed back then, and then taking all the moves that they did.
And I think for a lot of people, you know, if you didn't get the completion of Kagetsu's career with the retirement tour and the produce show, then you got it in a whole different way, of course, at Matinee, which was, you know, just a, obviously that's never something anyone wanted to happen, but I'm forever grateful that Yuishina, you know, Kagetsu was willing to come out of retirement after over a year off and show up, and not only show up, but be every bit of Kagetsu that, you know, was there a year ago in prime territory.
Oh, yeah. And didn't look like Kagetsu had missed a moment in the ring. Like her and Hazuki just came in and was like, yeah, no, we've been gone for a year, but you wouldn't know it. And then obviously a year later, officially Yuishino by this point came out for Vargas and wasn't wrestling, but obviously still such an important part of the Hana Kimura Memorial experience because of how close Yu was to Hana Kimura and Kyoko Kimura. Yeah, because Yu was there with Kyoko when Edotar was really coming into its own and then took it over and turned it into the beast that it was and is today.
And with Yuishino, he's involved still, like not involved still, like he works his, you know, real life job and blah, 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 but you know, flowers are backstage oftentimes at these shows for certain wrestlers from Yuishino. And it's always wonderful. Like I forget how long ago, but there was, you know, pictures of Suzuki and Yuishino together and, you know, Yuishino's moved on to whole new life and, you know, working a normal life, not a pro
arguably
wrestler.
Doing better things than he was as a wrestler.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But never out, you know, you know, and that's the beauty of it. And when we get those moments, whether it's the littlest thing of a picture with Hazuki or Natsu or something like that, it's great. It's great. It's why
it's the house that you built in many ways. Yeah.
Yes, and you know, those the flower things, those are things we don't always get to see, but we know, you know, with certain wrestlers, Yuishino sent, we have seen them. And really, this wasn't the Yuishino episode, this was the anniversary matches, but in the end, it ended up being about Kagetsu Yuishino in a lot of ways. Well, we close with that retirement match, but definitely go check that out, please. Yes. That is essential viewing. Because of just really, you get a little bit of everything. You get, you know, Mayu and Kagetsu teaming up, which is, you know, special in itself.
We've wanted that for so long.
Exactly, because, you know, and one of the great lines that I think resonates with us now, right, is Mayu's ready to lead Stardom into another level. That's what Kagetsu says, and it's like we're sitting here in 2023, we're like, could Kagetsu have been more right? Like, obviously, it wasn't just Mayu Iwatani, but who was the world champion when they needed it the most? It was Mayu at the time. And now we're here in 2023. They're the number two promotion in Japan. And it's because of what, you know, Kagetsu did, what Mayu did together in matches. It's because of Io Shirai that we talked about. It's because of Kairi Hojo that we talked about. It's because of so many of the talents we talked about. I think that's my favorite part of doing these match shows or it from the years is because you kind of see, oh, this is why we're here. This is why this has gotten to the level. And that's awesome.
It is, and it's fun just going back, and I've said it before and on this show, like when you're going through different eras of Stardom, just seeing how things change and the focal points and what works and what really gets highlighted in a Stardom big match situation. And you get that sort of mixed through over the years. And obviously the different matches, different setups, but you get to see so much of that Stardom growth, even if it's something as simple as Momo Watanabe in the gauntlet match versus Momo Watanabe in the Kagetsu retirement match.
Yeah.
You know, you see the same Momo, but so much growth, so much progression. You know, it's become, by this point, Momo is one of the best wrestlers in the world. You know, maybe not in terms of position with the company, but you put her in a match, she's going to deliver a banger.
Yeah. I mean, as by the time this comes out, I don't know, you know, some people might listen to this, you know, months down the road. Because that's what these shows are for. But, you know, Momo's
time sensitive.
Momo's about to wrestle Saya Kamatani in a match that's so meaningful in a lot of ways to the history that we're talking about here. And it's like, you know, it's going to deliver because that's what Momo Watanabe does. Like,
yeah,
at minimum, it's going to be very good. And yeah, and with what yeah. Saya has done, it's like, all right, this is going to be great. And I think that's, you know, we talk about Jungle a lot, talk about Kagetsu a lot, but I do like that you brought Momo. I think the only thing we didn't check here on this show today in terms of like matches that really emphasize Stardom then, now, and you know, going forward, is that we didn't have a great Wonder match to go over, which is a, you know, very different. But good news for everybody is that we'll have plenty to talk about soon enough. This was my wonderful transition. I was really excited about that one. That was not
actually wonderful.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Is that after, you know, we've completed these two anniversary shows, which is wonderful, but the next three episodes, this is why I started Stardom Road, or in my head originally, you know, and then I presented to Trent like, hey, let's, you know, go through Stardom's history and watch some cool matches. And, you know, Trent went on of like how it's easy to just make life, you know, oh, I have to go watch great Stardom matches. Sure. Little does he know, well, he does know now, obviously, is that when I
had a fair idea,
when I was thinking of this idea, the whole reason for me was to go through the career of Arisa Oshiki in a series of shows, episodes, and while we are going to be going through her career many other times because of certain events and whatnot, this is our chance to really just focus on Arisa Oshiki with a three show series, our first all wrestler series. You know, we talked about Yuzuki Ikawa, of course, to really kick this off, but this is something that will really guide the show. We have two series of wrestlers set up, and we're starting with Arisa Oshiki here, who, of course, one of my favorites of all time. It probably goes Mayu Iwatani at one and the 151 matches of Arisa Oshiki at two. But if there was anyone born to be a professional wrestler and be a great professional wrestler and born with the talent to do so, it was Arisa Oshiki. So I am very excited.
Yeah, so we're dedicating the next three episodes to her. We want to give like a full rundown of what made Arisa Arisa. So you'll get the first stint, you'll get the second stint, and then you're going to get just basically kind of what this episode was, but just dedicated to Arisa Oshiki. The best match is what you need to go to see if you want to get a visual for just how great Arisa was. This kind of wrestler retrospectives that we're going to be doing, starting with Arisa, I think we can both agree is probably going to be the backbone of Stardom Road in a lot of ways, because there are so many incredible talents and names that have walked through the doors of Stardom that we want to highlight. And especially if you joined sort of during the Bushiroad era, you haven't necessarily had a chance to see. And so we hope that if you're coming through, you're not used to these names, that this will inspire you to go back and look and see how great Stardom was. And if you are experienced with Stardom pre-Bushiroad, if you're like us, you've walked the Stardom road for years now, hopefully this gives you the same excuse that we have to go back and just love what has been produced. And yes, there's only 151 matches from Arisa Oshiki, but what are 151 matches there are. So much to love from her. And as you said, a born wrestler, a born entertainer, not just in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
We're both looking forward to it.
I like to say, and this is why I kind of get sad now when I talk about Arisa, is that she is like the most talented person I've ever seen. Like anything she did, she didn't just do it. She did it at the highest level of like talent-wise. Maybe, you know, her singing career didn't get to like all-timer points, but she was a great singer. She was a great wrestler, obviously, which is where we'll be hitting. But there's just so many exciting moments, matches that we're going to jump into that I'm so excited about. Maybe the show could just end after the three. I'm just kidding because I think there's so many others we want to explore. And that's why we love the show. So hopefully you do tune in for that one. Beginning with, you know, a little career overview and then her initial run with the company, which I think, I don't know, I, you know, the fun thing is I don't think everyone knows about that first run and what she was doing then. And, you know, we've touched on it already. We did our debut match and You know, kind of how Rossi pegged her and his blog is like the shining star, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, of the initial rookie crew. And like, you know, she's still very young then, but she'd go on to be great. And that's why she walked back in the door one day and she did become great. So I'm very excited to jump into that next time. But this was the anniversary matches edition for Stardom, as, and I'm sure next, you know, next time around we'll have some other sort of matches for, I don't know, there's some big, huge mega event coming up in April that we may be able to find something to discuss.
Yes.
You know, kind of around that idea. But this is what will bring us into it. And there's also a certain Cinderella tournament coming up as well, which, you know, that is, you want to talk about staples for Stardom. I think for a lot of people now, it's the five-star, but if you are a longtime Stardom fan, it's that Cinderella tournament. That was the true staple. So looking forward to all that. So please keep listening here. Trent, anything to plug before we wrap this up?
Yes, so basically by the time this episode comes out, either there'll be a new article on Natsupoi over on WrestleIn either on Friday or Monday. Haven't determined the specific time yet, but I'm excited to get that one out, sort of covering the departure from DDM and the TAM rivalry. So keep your eyes open for that. We also have an Ocean Cyclone show episode coming out in not this weekend, but next weekend. So if you like the sound of our voices, you've got plenty more coming your way.
And if you don't, but you like the sound of Ryan's, you should definitely still listen to it. And also, thank you for listening to this full episode, too. You know, follow me at Scotty Wrestling on Twitter if you don't do that already. In terms of plugs, I have interviews coming out. I don't know the dates yet. I'm not going to say one of them just in case it doesn't happen, but I do have two interviews in the bank. One with TJPW's Juri Nagano, which was very exciting to do because of her uniqueness, of course, to the sport of pro wrestling and TJPW itself. And while the answers are very short, they're very impactful, a special interview with one of my most highly hoped for interviewees, Arisa Serra. So make sure to keep an eye out on that. I'll have previews. You know, me and Trent will have reviews up in multiple fashions for that February 4th show. So definitely keep an eye out for those as well, because our next time out will be on February 7th. So I want to just make sure we get all those plugs in. Trent's review will be on Monthly Pure Wrestling. Of course, mine will be on Five Star Joshi Show. I don't know if I'm going to write one yet. I never know. It's just a matter of if someone...
See if you get inspired.
It's sometimes it's if Alex doesn't want to do it. And he's like, can you do this? I'm like, yeah, sure. For that show, I think I will be doing it because he's like, you know, it's a great show, but I think he's going away or something. I was like, you want me to review the show with Sai and Momo and Julia Suzuki? Ah, sure. Don't mind if I do. But make sure to check out all that. You know, we cover Stardom on a good amount. You know, I won't say weekly basis, but, you know, enough. Monthly basis for sure. So definitely check out for that as well. Thank you for listening, everybody. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the Stardom Road podcast so you never miss an episode. Because with the bi-weekly schedule, it's easy to forget. I know I do.
We forget.
I know I do as someone that records the episodes. So please make sure to do that. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next time with the Arisa Hoshiki 3-part series. See ya.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.